I thank you, Liar.
Well, sorry, Lyle.
I didn't even mean to do that one. If you want to know what that means, you have to come talk to me afterwards. But it is good to be here. Alana, my lovely wife, had some responsibilities in Owen Sound today, so I am here. Holly might be here. Are you here, Holly? There she is at the back. Yes, okay. So just so you know, she doesn't really look anything like the picture that's out there anymore. So I have new pictures. But you can come talk to me afterwards and I'll give you one of these. You can put them on your fridge and remember us when you have something to eat, which is this is a good time to remember me. So, but it is good. I've come here a number of times, known Lyle and Julie forever. And a number of groups have come over and I've gotten to know them. But I got to be honest with you, as an Owen Sounder, I can't talk too much about London in Owen Sound because it's not your team, the Knights, are not necessarily Owen Sound's favorite team. or maybe you are because we're rivals. But one of the highlights, so in Owen Sound, there's not a lot to do. So everybody goes to the attacking. And one of the highlights is when the Knights come to town, because all the old ladies just curse at Dale Hunter. No, there aren't any hunters here today, are there? Okay, good. Because I just by reflex, I might just start saying things and that would get, But the old gray-haired ladies are using like curse words I haven't heard in 20 years as he walks across the ice. It's not the players, it's just him. It's always a lot of fun when the Knights come to town. And I've been connected here, maybe 5, 6, 7 years. Well, I've tried to be subtle in my desire for someone to take me to a Knights game. Throwing subtlety out the window at this point. When I'm back in 2 years, I really want to go to a London Knights game. So I'll just leave that with you. But it's good to be here. Good to share with you this morning. It was great to see the quizzers. We were doing some quizzing in Cambodia, but it was kind of cute because I could tell even without the shirts, I knew they were quizzers because they weren't actually leaning back at all. If you've ever quizzed, you never use the back of a chair, right? Even when you're watching TV, you're sitting there, you're ready to go. And then they all scooted down and they all just got up like this much and moved over. There's a skills that you get that you can use for the rest of your life. Scripture and the ability to move really quickly if you have to. I want to talk to you today about from Matthew chapter 24. But before I do that, I want to say something else very important. I want to talk to you for a minute about Facebook. Now, how many of you have Facebook? All right, how many of you are my Facebook friend? Okay, if not, the question is why not? Right? I was on a goal earlier in the year. I wanted to get to 2,000 Facebook friends. I wanted to see what happened. And somewhere around January, I achieved that goal and nothing happened. If you are on Facebook and you want to get more likes and more people to respond to what you put on Facebook, become my friend. Because I got like 1,500 friends in Cambodia who just like everything. I always feel really good. I post something and it'll be about the Leafs or whatever and they have no idea and it's just So become my Facebook friend, only Bill Lombazoo on Facebook, and I will accept you. Don't ask me to send you a request. I don't do that anymore. After you get over 2,000, you just accept. Now, before Facebook, though, there was something called MySpace. How many of you had a MySpace page? Okay, yeah, went way down. Now, how many of you still have MySpace page? You know, it still exists. I went there the other day. But in the day, back in the day, MySpace was bigger than Facebook. MySpace was Facebook before Facebook was Facebook. They, you know, everybody had a MySpace page and they were always doing all their stuff on MySpace. But what happened? Because MySpace, no one has MySpace now. Just the people who work at the company, I think. What happened to them? See, they had the same business model as Facebook. They sold advertising like Facebook and they made money that way. But the problem MySpace had was that they began to go into other areas in which they knew nothing about. And so MySpace began to produce movies. They began to produce TV shows. They did book publishing. They opened restaurants. It was incredible. They figured if we're successful in one area, then surely we can be successful in other areas as well. And they weren't. And they became so diversified that they really lost everything because they forgot what their main thing was. Now, Facebook knew what they were. They knew what they were, they knew what they could do, and they did it well. And when they had developed their platform, then they began to diversify out into other areas. But Facebook has never forgotten what it is. Now, if you can define exactly what that is, you can come and tell me afterwards, but they know what it is, and they have never forgotten that, and they have stuck to what they are and doing what they do. The Christian and Missionary Alliance was started by a man named A.B. Simpson in the early 1900s. He believed in Jesus Christ as our Savior, our Sanctifier, our Healer, and our coming King. Dr. Simpson's driving passions were the deeper spiritual life, healing, and world evangelization. Key passage for Dr. Simpson was Matthew chapter 24, where he believed that when the whole world had heard the gospel, when the whole world had been evangelized, then and only then would Jesus return. He founded the Christian and Missionary Alliance in North America for the purpose of completing the task of world evangelization. And that was going to happen through training of workers and financial resources coming from North America and going out to the rest of the world. Now, how are we doing at fulfilling Dr. Simpson's vision? I'll get to that in a few minutes. But in the passage we're going to look at today, in Matthew chapter 24, Jesus is warning the disciples and he is warning us not to lose sight of the goal, that we need to keep the main thing, the main thing. Matthew chapter 24, I'm going to read verses 1 to 3. Jesus left the temple and was walking away when his disciples came up to him to call his attention to its buildings. "Do you see all these things?" he asked. "I tell you the truth. Not one stone here will be left on another. Everyone will be thrown down." As Jesus was sitting at the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. "Tell us," they said, "when will this happen and what will be the sign of the coming of the end of the age?" So Jesus is at the temple and he's teaching. And this is Passion Week. And so you need to remember, this is near the end of the week. At the beginning of the week, he came in on the donkey and everybody's cheering and they're throwing coats and they're throwing leaves and yay, you're awesome. And his disciples are with them. And by extension, if Jesus is awesome, then they also are awesome, right? And they're walking along and they're thinking, this is okay. This is way better than this wilderness deal we've been doing for a little while. We're in the city. People like us. I doubt they were having to buy any meals. Now, Jesus has been teaching at the temple all week. This is the last time he's going to be there, ever. And he knows it. And no one else does. But he knows there has some important things that he needs to tell the disciples. And yet they have no idea. See, they have no idea what's coming. And so any lesson he's going to tell them, they're not going to realize they need to know it because they don't know what's about to happen. So he says something to shock them. Right? Verse 2, he says, "Do you see all these things? I tell you the truth, not one stone here will be left on another." Right? The disciples are going, "Wow, look at this cool temple. Jesus, look at teacher, look at how cool this is." He says, "Yeah, it's all going to fall down." Just like that, and keeps walking. It's kind of the Jesus era mic drop moment. He just like drops the mic and walks away. And they're all like, whoa. So they come to him. They come to him afterwards. He didn't have to call them over, right? He didn't have to say to them, hey guys, come on in. I got something to tell you. No, they are there, and they're like following him. They're like behind him. Hey, teacher, what was that all about? They're hungry. They want to know. Jesus is many things. One of them is master teacher. If you're a teacher, if you teach Sunday school, or if you teach in the school system, if you are a teacher at all, study Jesus and just study his teaching techniques, because he is a master teacher. One of the things that we've been able to be involved in Cambodia over the last number of years is teacher training. And what Jesus did here is classic teacher training material. What he did is an icebreaker. It's called an icebreaker, or a hook, or an attention grabber, right? He's got their attention. Whether you're preaching or you're teaching, whether you're watching a movie or a TV show, if you're watching something, you're giving that maybe 2 minutes to catch your attention before you're moving on to something else, right? When a preacher is preaching, you're giving him a couple of minutes, and then if it's really not catching you, then you're suddenly pulling out the phone, right? And you're sending me a Facebook request. It's a hook. I started today by talking about the London Knights, and whether you liked what I said or not, it pulled you in. That's what Jesus was doing. Teacher training. Something that we've been involved in Cambodia. See, these churches are beginning, and we call them schools in Cambodia, but I've discovered it's better to call them like after-school programs, or basically students come after they study at the state school and they get further training at the church. And the church sees this as a way to do evangelism, but also as a way to help combat human trafficking. Because human trafficking is a huge problem in the world, but the core, the root of it, is economic. And if you can get, especially the father of a family, a job, but anyone in the family a job, the chances of a child being trafficked go down. Because the cause is money. And so these students come and they get computer and they get English training, and that helps them to stay in school, and that helps them to be able to find a job, and it keeps them from being trafficked. And the churches have figured that out in Cambodia, and they're doing that, and we get to come alongside of them and help them establish these programs. And so what we do is teacher training. And we, over the last 4 years, we've had the opportunity to train over 400 teachers. And we have, you know, it'll be a couple day seminar, and the people will come and we'll do some teaching. And there's a picture of us at the teacher training. Yeah, sorry, no, that wasn't it. There we are. Yeah, I skipped a bunch of stuff. and if you look, there's a monk there. Now, there's nothing evangelistic about the teacher training, other than it's in a church, right? We're training teachers. We're not using the Bible for training. We want the church to do the evangelism. We're there to come alongside. But these guys, they came and they wanted to learn how to teach better in their teaching situation. And so we've had out of those 400 students, probably about 4 monks that have come. And a couple of them have actually stopped being monks. They've, they wear more civilian clothes now. They're growing their hair. I like to think I'm the inspiration for that. But, although I got to be honest, I love the robe. It just looks so comfy, right? I want to get one of those just to lounge around the house in. But can you imagine someone coming to the door and I go and answer it and there I am in my monk robe watching the Leafs? Now, these two guys are not Christians yet. but they're on the road. They've begun to attend church, and they're asking questions. And it's a neat outworking of how God is using something that you know, if we meant to be developmental, God is using evangelistically. Because we want to give the church what they need so that they can fulfill the Great Commission in the setting that they are in. Now, back to the story. Jesus has the disciples right where he wants them. They're sitting there, they're listening, they want to know. So he moves on to the next point, and that is distractions. So, Matthew chapter 24, verses 4 to 8. Jesus said, "Watch out that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name, claiming I am the Christ, and will deceive many. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places, and all these things are the beginning of birth pains." Now, Jesus tells them first about false teaching and about false teachers. Jesus is about to be arrested, crucified, rise from the dead, hang around for 40 days doing some teaching, and then ascend into heaven. And then on his way up into heaven, as the disciples are standing there going, he's going to say to them, "Oh, by the way, go tell everybody about me, and then I'll come back." As they're standing there, they're going to remember this lesson that Jesus is telling them. See, there's always been and always will be false teachers. False teachers, wrong teachers. How many of you have been to an end time seminar? Remember that? Well, that was what, the 70s and the 80s, and these guys would come in on Sunday nights and they had the charts and the whole dealio. And we'd watch those. Hal Lindsey's Late Great Planet Earth. Now, as a missionary, when they're kind of done with resources, they send them to the missionary. It's kind of the modern day used tea bag. I got stacks of Hal Lindsey's Late Great Planet Earth in my office in Phnom Penh. That and a bunch of that of Rob Bell stuff. Not my buddy Rob Bell, who's here. Yeah, the different Rob Bell. But there's always going to be false teachers, wrong teachers, and a lot of times it ends up distracting the church. When the church becomes so worried about combating the false teaching that they forget about what they're supposed to be doing, and that is the Great Commission. We lose sight of what we're supposed to be doing. How many of you remember the movie The Da Vinci Code? And the hubbub that surrounded that in the church. We had a whole sermon series on The Da Vinci Code. By the end, I'm pretty sure we should have been selling tickets at the back because we were advertising that thing. And people became so concerned about the Da Vinci Code that we lost sight of what it is that we are to be doing, and that is taking the gospel to the ends of the world. Probably not many of us know that the third movie in the series came out in the spring. You probably went to see it and didn't even realize. And we didn't say a peep about it in the church. But these things, we allow them to distract us. Controversies and other things, and we get all so worked up about them that we lose sight of what it is that we are to be doing. Talks about wars and rumors of wars. There's always been wars, and there will always be wars. World War I was called the Great War because it was the war to end all wars, and that worked out pretty well. Then they decided to try it again. World War II was the war to end all wars. You know, that didn't really work out either. I remember sitting in Regina, I was a student at Canadian Bible College at the time, watching the Berlin Wall come down. How many remember that? Watching on TV and those dudes up there with the hammers on the top, and we're like, that's it. War is over. You know, we were all John Lennon fans there for a couple of days. The collapse of communism, that was it. It was going to usher in the New World Order, which was peaceful and without war. Well, the New World Order didn't work very well. In fact, the professional wrestling New World Order with Hulk Hogan and a couple of other guys was much more successful than that. How many remember that? Now that was good. Lyle can tell you I was a Hulkamaniac. I have a lot of ripped t-shirts in my closet. Cambodia, the country that we've been living in for 20 years, went through war. The Vietnam War, which we know has spilled over into Cambodia. And the Khmer Rouge, the war was from 19, Khmer Rouge ruled Cambodia from 1975 to 1979. And in that time, there was a genocide. Khmer Rouge was led by this man, Pol Pot. And during that time, there was a genocide that took the lives of approximately 2 million people. In a country with a population of 6 million, to lose 2 million of your people is a lot. And so now you have an entire country dealing with the effects of post-traumatic stress disorder. See, everyone in Cambodia lost someone, a mother, a father, a sister, a brother, an aunt, an uncle, a grandparent, a niece, a nephew. Every country was touched by the genocide of the Khmer Rouge. And everybody suffers from PTSD. Imagine what the effects of post-traumatic stress disorder on an entire country. So one of the effects is that the inability to reason, to think ahead. And I see it every day in Phnom Penh when I go to a traffic light. Because people cannot, they think, well, it might go green, but it might just stay red forever, so I better go now. Right? And people go, why is the traffic like this? Well, because everybody's dealing with the effects. When war is over and when the soldiers pack up, it's not over for the people who are there. War produces refugees. And I have to say, I'm impressed with Canada and with our government and how we stepped up during the Syrian refugee crisis and brought a lot of people to Canada and the churches and the getting involved. And it's a great thing. But sometimes I get a little frustrated when people will say things like, well, see, this is God bringing the world to us. And that's true, but I think sometimes God had to bring the world to us because we didn't go to the world. One of the things that I've had the opportunity to do in Cambodia is teach at one of the universities there. The Royal University of Phnom Penh. And I got to teach English there. Because I discovered, Alana and I went to Cambodia, we were going to work with students, and we discovered very quickly that students are very busy. They're studying at two or three different universities. They don't have any spare time. If you say to a student, come over to our house when you have spare time, they're never coming because they don't have any. And so we discovered that to have an effect with the students, you need to become part of their world. And so I began teaching. And so now, students had to come and see me every day if they wanted to get their degree. And through that, I was able to build relationships with them, and we couldn't do evangelism at the school, but we could invite them over to the house or invite them to some of the short-term things that we would do. We became part of their world. If we are going to take the gospel to the ends of the earth, we need to become part of people's worlds. We can't wait for them to come to us. Jesus talks about natural disasters, famines, earthquakes, etc. Why? Why are these things happening? Why, you know, there's flooding in Mount Forest. I had to take a different route coming down because Highway 6 got flooded. Now, why is this happening? The earth is getting old. I'm getting old. I know it's hard to believe, but I'm getting old. I know it every time I get out of bed and my knees are making this funny sound, and I think I've already put the milk on my Rice Krispies. The earth is getting old, and it's getting crowded. And we sit there and we go, Lord, why are you letting this happen? And God's like, guys, I gave you a job to do. If you just get it done, we could all get out of here. That's the reality here. It's getting crowded, it's getting polluted, and we're just not getting the job done. See, Canada is nice, and there's some really nice spots in Canada. But heaven is way nicer. way nicer. Cambodia, crowded, it floods. One of our interns sent a picture the other day of flooding outside of his apartment building in downtown Phnom Penh. Those of you who have been to English camp know about the flooding and how I make you walk through it. There's poverty everywhere. And people come, well-meaning people come, and try to help deal with these problems. Deal with the flooding, and deal with the poverty, and deal with the overcrowding, and deal with a lot of these things. But the reality is this: they are dealing with the fruit of the problem and not the root. You show the picture of the tree. There's the fruit of a problem, and if you deal with the fruit of the problem and get rid of the fruit, it's just going to come back. But if you deal with the root of the problem goes away. The root of the problem is sinfulness. And the fact that people don't know Jesus. And the fact that we need to get out there and we need to tell them. I still believe that the most developmentally sound thing we can do for a community is go into that community and help plant a church there. And then watch as the local Christians deal with the local problems. Which brings us to the third point, which is the goal. Verses 9 to 12. Then you will be handed over to be persecuted and put to death, and you will be hated by all.